This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Today on Sticks In, we are all about recapping a very exciting weekend in the lacrosse world. We had four quarterfinal NLL games to talk through. All of them were pretty incredible to watch and came down to some very, very special performances. And then we will go through the latest, as we usually do here on the Tuesday episode, top 20 Inside Lacrosse media poll. We'll take a look through the ballot. We'll take a look at where teams are in the RPI, and conference tournament time is upon us. We have games on Tuesday and Thursday and Friday this week as we try and work our way down to the final field of 17 teams that will compete for an NCAA national championship. If you are enjoying the podcast, please do the usual like, subscribe, download, leave a nice review, share it with people, all that good stuff. Thank you again for coming back. Let's do it. Welcome to our Tuesday Top 20, Tuesday episode of Sticks In Podcast. My name is Dan Arestia. I am happy you're here. There's a lot of action over the weekend. We can get right into sort of the meat of it. Let's start with the pro level. We'll start with the quarterfinal round in the NLL over the weekend. Four games. Defensive battles across the board, I would say. If you're of the gambling inclination, if that's what you're into, all four games went under. Only one team even hit double-digit goals all weekend. And lacrosse, especially pro lacrosse, that is, fair to say, unusual. The first game, kind of the one that I think basically went to script, Rochester paid a visit to Toronto. Rochester, as we know, was the 8 seed. They secured their playoff berth literally on the last game of the regular season. Toronto won this game 9-6. Tom Schreiber scored a goal after a split dodge. He scored left-handed, and it set social media on fire because I saw Brian Kavanaugh post a clip of it spliced with the scene in semi-pro where the alley-oop gets invented, and it was blowing the minds of Canadians the same way, which was hilarious. But you do not see the you call it the wrong-handed goal in lacrosse, in indoor lacrosse, I should say. I was not kind of really surprised by the result in this one. The Rocks defense is just too good. Nick Rose is just too good. It wasn't surprising to see Rochester kind of struggle to put up numbers in this one. They fought. Don't get me wrong. They battled. They made a little run late. They made it interesting. I think they closed within three or four goals, you know, with some time left in this game, but just not enough time to complete the comeback and stick with Toronto. So I still think the Rock look like a team of destiny. The semifinal round that we will have, the best of three round, is going to be them and Buffalo. That rivalry is special, and that is going to be fun. Speaking of the Bandits, that was the Saturday night game. The I guess what you would call kind of the main event. It had the primetime slot. Four games over the weekend. This one, Saturday night, 7 o'clock, ESPNU. We had Buffalo and Georgia. Played in front of almost 18,000 fans, if I saw the number right, up there in Bandit land. The Bandits take this game 10-9 in OT on an OT game winner from Josh Byrne. Josh Byrne is an assassin, just like a stone-cold killer. It is unreal, like the ice in that guy's veins in lacrosse games. I think he is the closest thing that pro lacrosse has to Kobe Bryant on a basketball court. He's just, in those moments, and the ball's with him, you just know it's going to be deadly. I said it on social, too, and if you haven't seen the clip of his OT game winner, you should go watch it. The NLL, everybody's posted it at this point. The Bandits, the NLL. I have it on mine, courtesy of the NLL a lot. Josh Byrne, in overtime, he has the ball, and he kind of just has this walk forward into the zone, and there's something about the way he is walking into the zone, carrying the ball and kind of looking at the way things are unfolding in front of him, that like his body language says, I'm ending this right now. I'm ending the game. Ice in his veins. He had 5 goals in the game, including the game winner, so he had half of Buffalo's goals. 6 more assists for Dane Smith. Obviously, this duo is so lethal. I'm, of course, very sad they won't be on the field together in the summer, but I will enjoy watching Josh outdoors, Dane indoors all summer. For Georgia, man, they got themselves a goalie. Brett Dobson is he was saving everything. He had 49 saves in this game. Of the 10 goals Buffalo scored, 4 were on the power play. Even strength, Georgia gave up just 6 goals to this Buffalo offense. Every goal that Buffalo scored in the third quarter, power play. Dobson was getting everything. You know, Georgia does have a couple of kind of aging stars maybe in a few spots, but in goal, they are set for a long, long time. Between the outdoor game and the indoor game, if you're talking about best goalies playing the sport right now, Brett Dobson has to be, you know, in that conversation for sure. Buffalo, as we said, they get Toronto in the semis. It's a classic matchup. It's a classic rivalry. Who's getting over the hump there? Is it that time? I don't know. We'll see. Buffalo defending champ and playing every bit the part of a team that looks like they're going to defend their title right now. They look very, very good. Toronto has been the best team in the league all year for my money. So that best of 3 series is going to be great. That gets started with the first 2 games this weekend. Game 1 is in Toronto. Game 2 will be in Banditland. It kind of like, when you look at it that way, and you think about just the calendar, it feels like it's going to go 3. Toronto winning in Banditland and at home, 2 games in a row against Buffalo is hard. The second of the two, winning an elimination game in Buffalo, that ain't easy. So that matchup, those 2 games this weekend will be electric. Lax after dark on Saturday last weekend. Panther City in San Diego. Seals took it 9-8 in overtime. Thank you very much to Nick Casello to shout out my children on the broadcast. They were up entirely too late, but they got a huge kick out of hearing their names on the television. I'll say this, Panther City, I mean, Nick DeMoot is unreal. Unreal. San Diego put 18 more shots on goal than Panther City did. They won 19 of 21 faceoffs. It was just pressure, pressure, pressure on this Panther City defense. And DeMoot was a wall. Just a wall. I think he had 54 saves, I want to say. I got to go back and look at the numbers, but somewhere in that area. Panther City, without Donville, it's a tough break. You know, he's clearly one of your top options on that righty side, but you have to be excited about Ryan Sheridan stepping up in that game. I think he finished with 2 goals, so he didn't necessarily, you know, fill the book or anything in a way where if you're looking at the box score, does he jump out at you? Probably not. But if you watch the game, man, he was looking like a guy who wanted to shoulder the load. I had said kind of before the weekend they were going to need somebody to step up over there with Donville out, and he looked like not only did he do it, but he wanted it. Like he's a guy who was demanding to have that responsibility. He looked like a star in the making, for real. Again, I think just 2 goals, but like he plays a He plays this physical, it's fearless is what it is the way he plays. He looks like he is afraid of nothing. He looks like he wants the moment every time he touches the ball. I really thought Panther City battled San Diego just too deep, though, I think, on offense. There was part of me late in that game where I thought Panther City might gut it out, might pull it off. But by the end of regulation, the way things were kind of starting to go, the Seals just started to kind of feel inevitable to me. Dobie wins it in overtime, and it was like, yeah, that's probably about right. But Panther City, I think that showing was great. I did not think the odds makers didn't think it. I don't think most people thought that they were going to hang within a goal and be, you know, an overtime goal away from the upset there. But that's the kind of year it's been in the NLL. So Seals advance to the semifinals where they will play the winner of the other. The final game of the weekend, the Sunday game, Albany beats Halifax 9-3. Yes, you heard me correctly. Halifax scored 3 goals. That stunned me. Just 3. And look, I don't want to take anything away from Albany here. Doug Jamison, 52 saves. Incredible. I saw, I think Teddy Jenner said it on social, Jamison is now 6-0 versus Halifax in the regular season of the playoffs. It's bonkers to have a team's number like that. It's really, really impressive. 6-0 against one team. Oof. Jamison just, I guess, got Halifax figured out. But Halifax, scoring 3, I don't think anybody would tell you that they saw that coming. One of those 3-2 came on the power play, so just 2 even strength goals. You know, Jamison, incredible. Yes, again, don't want to take anything away from Albany here, but you know, Halifax is showing up with an offense that puts Randy Stotts, Ryan Benesch, Clark Peterson, Cody Jamison, Austin Shanks, like the people that take the floor for that team to only put up 3 is surprising. And it got a little ugly at the end. Withers got a misconduct, and then there was that incredibly wild moment late. I believe Mark Singlais posted video of it, but there's some video of it on social where David Brock was in the penalty box, and I think a fan is letting him hear it and screaming at him, and it looked like Brock had to be restrained from going after the fan. Like, he was trying to climb over the boards, or he was going to go up over the boards. He was really, I mean, I don't know what was said. I don't know what kind of lines were crossed to set him off like that. I can't imagine it was very nice. It did look like whoever, like a fan got escorted out after it happened too, but it's just to see that happen was certainly, you know, you never like seeing that kind of thing. This was the weekend's most surprising result. And it wasn't just that Albany won. It was that Albany only allowed 3 goals. They didn't play like a young team. You know, I said it last week, like when you get in pro sports, typically young teams, and pro lacrosse is not an exception, young teams play young in the postseason, meaning they don't have as much experience. They're more prone to mistakes, mental errors, those kind of things that where this the moment can get to them a little bit. It did not happen with this team. As particularly late, as the game was getting chippy late and all that. They were poised. Ty Kurtz wasn't taking the bait, getting into it with anybody. I think credit to them, credit to Coach Clark for that. I will still be hung up on it for a while. Just 3 goals from Halifax. Very surprising. Very surprising indeed. So Albany and San Diego is the second semi. Toronto and Buffalo, the first semi. You'll have a pair of games in each of those matchups this weekend. I believe they go Friday, Sunday. It might be Friday, Saturday. You got to check the schedule. It looked like they were adjusting timings and stuff, and I think they'll have an announcement about viewing and all that. But you'll have 2 semifinal games this weekend. If both sweep, the NLL can move the final start forward to next weekend. So if we get 2-2-0s, they can move the finals up. Otherwise, it'll be you'll have games this weekend and then a third game next weekend to decide the semis. I guess the last note here is, you heard me say it as we go through the games between each one of them, but the goalies, man, holy cow, the goalies. The average save total for a goalie this weekend was 47. 47 saves across 8 different goalies, the average 47. 3 goalies went over 50. The goal totals being so low was the word and the order of those 8 massive men standing in front of those nets, stopping absolutely everything. And I kind of liked it, you know? I have the times where I like seeing the game that finishes, you know, 17, 16, there's a million goals and all that. Those games are fun too, but, in the playoffs, like the goal at a premium, you know, if you watch the Stanley Cup playoffs, man, a goal feels electric. It sets a building off. When the goals are hard to come by and the goalies are dialed and you put one in and it feels massive, I love those kind of games too. So I kind of hope it stays this way. I hope the goals stay at a premium. We got four great goalies left in it, for sure. Let's get to the college ranks here now, after we kind of put a bow there on the NLL. Semifinals this weekend will be fun. In college, the regular season is officially in the books. Now the stakes get raised. There were 76 programs in D1 men's lacrosse this year. The conference tournament fields that are in place now, including the ACC schools, which the four teams in it are all obviously in the mix for an at-large. There's no AQ there, but they're all at-large kind of teams. That means there are 42 teams still alive playing for a spot in the NCAA tournament. How many spots in the NCAA tournament? 17. 9 AQs, 8 at-larges. And the ACC is probably taking half of those at-larges. So the field will take shape this week, but those are the stakes. That's how much we're cutting down to. From 76 to now 42. And on Sunday night on ESPN, I believe ESPNU, you will have Cotter, Quint, and Kark tell you the cut down, who the 17 are that are going to be there. I love Selection Sunday. I believe it happens at like 9 o'clock. It's a great night. It's a circle the calendar night for lacrosse Twitter, as always, because it's electric, especially if we have a really good bubble. If we get down to like, there's a very clear like three teams and two spots kind of deal, the hot take machine will kick into action and that'll be fun. But Selection Sunday is always a joy. Always a joy. The action this week, as I kind of said earlier, you got games on Tuesday, you got games on Thursday, you got games on Friday, and then I believe Sunday is the latest of the games. The Ivy League Championship game is Sunday, and that might be the last one of the weekend. So, and then Sunday night is the selection show. We'll go through the media poll now, the top 20 from Inside Lacrosse that came out today. As a reminder, this time of year, because it's particularly relevant, this poll means like, in terms of the NCAA tournament, it really doesn't mean anything. The media poll has zero bearing on the tournament field. The selection committee uses their own metrics, historically leaning very heavily on the RPI, to pick the field. That's that. They pick it. Do they think about the media poll? Probably not. I don't know. It is fun because we all get to then impugn either the media or the committee for being so loud wrong about where they had somebody, in the event that someone gets unexpectedly snubbed or whatever it may be. Famously recently with Notre Dame finishing number 4 or whatever in the media poll and not making the tournament, like squaring those things was hilarious for a while. But the committee does not consider the media poll while they pick the field. That said, we still like to do it. As always, this is my ballot for this week's top 20. I will give you where I voted, is what I will say first, and then I will give you where they actually came in the poll that came out today, and I'll give you the RPI as well as we go through here. Number one, Notre Dame. Easy. Notre Dame's unanimous number one in the poll. They're number one in the RPI by a decent margin. They are... The question is, who's giving them a game right now? Who can beat them? And as you look across college lacrosse, I don't know how many answers there are. There's not a lot, if there's any. The Irish beat UVA by 2 goals in a game that really didn't have much in the way of stakes. Notre Dame was number one seed in the ACC tournament, locked up. Virginia could not miss the ACC tournament, so wasn't a whole lot. And it's not like the ACC has an AQ anyway, so not much in the way of stakes. I think Pat Cav, I might make him the Tewarton favorite right now. I think it's certainly a discussion with him. I would make right now my three or four guys for the medal stand: Pat Cavanaugh, CJ Kearse, Connor Schellenberger, and Matt Brandau. I think it was something like that. Brendan O'Neill is obviously going to be right there because he's a game-wrecking player. But anyway, it's eight straight now for Notre Dame. They win the regular season ACC crown. Next up is an ACC tournament where Notre Dame will play UVA again down in Charlotte, where the tournament's being held. They play where the Carolina Chaos are going to be playing their games, I believe, at American Legion Memorial Stadium down there. So, great lacrosse venue. That'll be down there in Charlotte, the ACC tournament. It's kind of the subject of some discussion because, again, it has no AQs. So people are like, what's the point? Why are we doing this? I think it's fine. It'll be kind of funny if teams kind of take their foot off the gas a little bit. You know, I would consider all four teams that are in the ACC tournament to be safely in the NCAA tournament field. So it doesn't feel really like the tournament has stakes unless you really consider the seeding to be a stake. You know, hosting a game, not hosting a game, I don't know. How many will do that? How many will not? And if the results of this tournament will influence that in a major way. But, you know, how hard do they bring it in this tournament? I'm sure you're going to want to do it because, you know, there's no better way to tune up for the NCAA tournament than playing a quick game against somebody else who you know is going to be there. But, yeah, ACC tournament is a little bit odd. I hope they just find some way to get a sixth team in there. I don't know how. I know. Every time this comes up, it's like, well, they should just add BC. You know, it's so easy. It's really, really hard. It takes a lot, but you know, I hope there's an avenue to it at some point soon. At number two in the poll, I put Syracuse. Second week in a row, I did this. They are number four in the RPI. They didn't play this weekend. Their schedule was all done. I had them number two last week. I have them number two this week. I have them two, and I'll tell you now, I have Hopkins three. And I do it because Q's beat Hopkins head to head. So I put Q's in the two spot. They had the two seed in the ACC tournament locked up going into the weekend, so they could have, you know, they had nothing to move up or down. And as the other teams played, they will play Duke down in Charlotte this weekend. Having the week off, I guess, means they get to, you know, get healthy a little bit, get rested, because the sprint to Memorial Day it starts now. We'll see if they're one of the teams that, you know, tries to notch a big win here in the ACC tournament, or if they just try and make sure they get through it healthy. At number three, I have Hopkins. They are number two in the poll. I should say Q's I had at two, they are three. Hopkins I had at three, they are two in the poll. Hopkins is also number two in the RPI. They didn't play last weekend. They were not all wrapped up. They had a bye to start the Big Ten tournament because they won the Big Ten regular season crown. So they were the one seed awaiting the results of the other Big Ten quarters. They will get Michigan this weekend in the Big Ten semis. This Big Ten tournament's at Ohio State. Hopkins has won five in a row, punctuated by that end-of-season win against Maryland, as we said, for the Big Ten regular season crown. They're safely into the tournament. Obviously, you want to win the Big Ten, too, because keep hanging those banners. But, you know, you look at their record. Their three losses right now are Denver, Q's, and then the Navy loss. And those losses are by a combined three goals. They battle out. They are a tough out, man. At number four, I have Denver. This match is the final poll. Denver came in four there. Pios are five in the RPI. They took care of Marquette this week in some unexpectedly late night after dark lacrosse. Some lightning seriously delayed this game. The Denver social media said it was a record-breaking number of lightning strikes. It was like 100 and something lightning strikes. Usually you fire up the old Doppler radar. You know this, if you were ever a lifeguard, you know, man. Fire up that radar and you can see where the lightning strikes are in the area. You can see when they're happening. And you can see, I mean, it must have been like a Christmas tree, but the game finally did get going. I think it was around like 11 o'clock Eastern on my time. It was late, but Pios won the game. They really didn't need it. They had already locked up the one seed, the Big East tournament. They will play Villanova in the first round. Nova is the host, too, of the Big East tournament. Big East could be a little bit spicy should Denver not win it, depending on who does get the AQ, but you kind of have to make Denver the prohibitive favorite there. They are very, very good. At number five, I have Virginia. The Hoos tumble a little bit here. They come down to five. This match is where they came in the final poll. That's also, you know, there were five there. They are six in the RPI. As I pointed out, they have lost three in a row for the first time in a decade. Last time they lost three in a row was 2014. I will add that I am in no way panicking on UVA, and UVA fans should not be panicking. Supporters, don't panic. Relax. Take a nice deep breath. Don't think that UVA can't win it, anything like that. The losses that they have are Duke, who they just never beat. I don't know why, but they never beat Duke. They lost to Cuse in the Dome in a shootout that was a very winnable game. But they, you know, came up a goal short at the very last minute in that game. Again, in a Dome that was raucous and a tough place to play. And then you lose to Notre Dame this week, who is by far the best team in the country, and you lose by 2 goals. You're hanging with them. It's not like they're like choking away awful games or playing really badly. I think here at 5 is basically UVA's floor. I think at worst they're the 5th best team in America. I think they have a Tewarton finalist running the offense. I think you just want to try and see them get, I said it last week, you want to see them get a little more out of their midfield. It's tough to have Cormier, Schellenberger, you know, doing a lot of the work. You need to get a little more from the midfield beyond just shuts. So we'll see how UVA does this week down in Charlotte at the ACC tournament. Number 6, I have Duke. Yeah, they have to slide a bit for the loss to Carolina. I dropped them here to 6. This match is where they came in the final poll. They were also 6 there. Duke is still at 3 in the RPI, last I looked. So I was very ready for the launch of the Duke is peaking at the right time takes. But I guess maybe we delay those a little bit. Maybe it's not the right time yet. I don't know. Because there was a little while there where Duke suddenly needed a Notre Dame win to make the ACC tournament. Again, we've covered it now to death, but it's not the end of the world. There's no IQ. Duke and Cuse and Notre Dame and Virginia are almost certainly all in. Duke gets in anyway because they got the win they needed. We'll get to North Carolina in a little bit. We'll get to them when we talk a little bit in the poll. But Duke has lost 2 of 3 to close the year, which is surprising because, as we said, they have a reputation for playing well at the right time. Sometimes they start by losing 2 of 3 or something weird like that, but they do not end their season that way usually. So I think maybe the place you kind of see the impact of a loss like this is in their NCAA tournament seed. When we get to that, do they, you know, get a little bit of a worse seed after something like this? You know, their RPI is still 3, so the committee weighing this loss, I think, is interesting. Number 7, I have Maryland. 7's across the board for them. I have them 7. They are 7 in the final poll. They are 7 in the RPI. They did not play this weekend. They were the 2 seed, or they are, I should say, the 2 seed in the Big Ten tournament. So they had a bye in the first round there. They now get to play Penn State. In their first matchup between those two, Penn State actually lost that game. Maryland won. I think it'll be fun. I've been high on Penn State. This is a game where Tillman will have the Terps in it. He always does. Will Maryland try to grind things down to a halt again? They might have to. You might have to. Tough to do a track meet with Penn State. But they have the faceoff guy to do it. This, again, is my conundrum with Maryland. But there's 2 first-round caliber talents that'll be on the field in that game, too. With Ajax, with Zapatello, probably guarding TJ Malone. You get a couple of PLL first-round level players where they go on the first round. We'll see on draft day, but they're first-round caliber talent. Number 8, Cornell, for me. They are also 8 in the poll. They are 9 in the RPI. They will be the host of the Ivy League tournament. The semifinals are up in Ithaca on Friday. I'm going to be honest here, just as a little tangent. I strive for objectivity and all that, and I do not cheer for particular game outcomes. Certainly never publicly. 99% of the time, I don't cheer for a game outcome at all. But I was really kind of hoping for some magic so Cornell didn't host. I'm sorry, Big Red. A trip to Ithaca is so far, and it's Ithaca. I really do love going to the Ivy Tournament. It being at Columbia the last couple years has been great for me because it's just this easy train ride into the city. I gladly would have taken a Yale host, but the results I would need for that to happen did not come close. So Cornell will be the host. I think CJ Kirst is a top 2 to 3 Tewarton guy right now. These, though, were the moments, as I kind of gave you the Tewaren guys, we go here again. I think Kavanaugh, Schellenberger, Kirst are, I think, probably the medal stand for me right now. 1, 2, 3 in some order. Brandau right there. But this is when the award gets won. Conference tournaments into the postseason. This is where you have the moment. In football, they talk about the Heisman moment, the huge game, the big play you make to make the difference in that game. These are the games where you have the Tewaren moments for these guys. So you start seeing them grab that award this weekend. Friday night, that's when the resume starts getting built for CJ Kirst. At number 9, I have Penn State. They are also 9 in the final poll. I'm sorry, I did not deviate from the poll here much at all, man. It's the kind of thing that happens, I guess. They're 8 in the RPI. They beat Rutgers for the second time in 2 weeks, this week in the Big Ten tournament quarters. As we kind of said, they get Maryland next. Penn State has won 3 straight. It could easily be more. They really had a handle on that Hopkins game and just couldn't put it away. They open as a slight dog, I believe, on the money line against the Terps, but Penn State... I don't know. The Big Ten is tough to read. Like, who would you consider a bid thief in the Big Ten right now? Michigan, for sure. But the other 3 feel like all tournament-level teams. You got to go get into the RPIs and the resumes and all that. And I haven't done it super closely, but, it's Big Ten's kind of an interesting conference to me. At number 10, I have Georgetown, the Hoyas. 10 for me, 10 in the final poll. I keep matching the poll. They are 11 in the RPI. Yeah, it is funny how similar things get as the year goes on between the top and the middle of the poll, but they kind of stay weird down to the bottom. As we get down to the bottom, you'll see my poll up strays a little further. Does Georgetown need to win the Big East? Do they need to? They have an interesting case right now. They're 11 in the RPI. I believe, as I gave you these numbers, by the way, I pull this from Lax Reference, who... I will say it every time I reference him, reference Lax Reference, I guess dad jokes, but it's worth every cent of subscribing to Lax Reference. The data is incredible, and he does a spectacular job. They do a spectacular job. Whoever it is doing all the work over there is doing a spectacular job of keeping everything up to date and really getting into the data. So shout out to them. And again, this is where I'm kind of pulling these numbers from. But Georgetown, 11 in the RPI. They are 20th in strength of schedule. They have a top 5 RPI win. They have a top 20 RPI win. They have 2 top 5 losses and a top 20 loss. They're sitting right next to Penn in the RPI. It feels to me like one of those 2 is getting left out if they don't win their conferences. One of those 2. But I don't know which one yet. Army... at 11 for me. They are 11 in the poll. They are down at 14 in the RPI. I've been kind of saying it for conferences like the Patriot League for sure. They're 14 in the RPI. Does it really matter? It's probably a one-bid conference. Army is going to make an interesting case if they don't win it, if they go to like the finals and lose. But it feels like a one-bid conference. So, for some of these teams, their RPI might as well be 100. Army got the results they needed in a... very wild last weekend of Patriot League play. There were 16 different scenarios for the Patriot League. But it was different. The A-Sun also had 16, but the Patriot League was different because you knew the 6 teams that were in. The field was set, but Army could have been the 1 seed. They could have been the 6 seed. There were a couple of teams that went that way where they could have finished anywhere from the host to the last seed. Kind of made all those games, pretty juicy. But Army got the results they needed in that wild last weekend. They beat Loyola, holding on kind of late. That Hounds team is tough. They played tough. With the other results of the weekend, they locked up the 1 seed. So Army is going to host the Patriot League tournament, or at least, the Patriot League semis and the finals. It's a massive edge for Army in particular because they cut down the travel. There's all the challenges that come with being not just a college athlete, but one at West Point where, sometimes you don't get enough rest. Sometimes your schedule is so packed that you don't get enough recovery or as much recovery as an athlete might that's not at a service academy school. So big for Army to host and at least cut down the travel and all that. They get to stay home. They get to lock in. So the little bit of rest, I'm sure, is going to mean a lot for them. I mean, you saw it, like, you know, their LSM was taking an MCAT and traveling separately before their game last weekend. That's the kind of players' obligations that you're dealing with for Army. So the Cadets, the Black Knights, will host the tournament. Big for them. At number 12, I have Princeton. The Tigers are up to 12 for me. And they are also 12 in the final poll following their win over Yale. They are at 13 in the RPI. I do think they probably need to win the Ivy League tournament. The Ivy's kind of a conference that intrigues me the most because all four teams that are in the tournament can win the tournament for sure with the Ivy. Where you like all four of them, you wouldn't be shocked, I guess. And all four teams are also, and I think there's something to be said for this. All four are good enough to win an NCAA tournament game. There's other like media folks I've talked about this with, but if you're going to put somebody in the NCAA tournament for like an at-large kind of thing, I feel like you need to ask yourself, if I put them in the tournament, can they win a game? Can they beat somebody in of the AQs or the other people that we're thinking about putting in? The other people in consideration, can they beat somebody there? If the answer is like resoundingly no, we'll put them in, but they definitely won't win, then you shouldn't put them in. I think all four teams in the Ivy League tournament can win an NCAA tournament game. For Princeton in particular, I thought Colin Mulshein played his ass off against Matt Brandau. I think there's a real decider in that game, and that was face-offs. McMeekin absolutely dominated. It sucked to see it, especially on senior day, but Nick Ramsey took the first face-off immediately. Definitely had some contact, you know, not any contact that you wouldn't typically see on a face-off, you know, just typical face-off kind of play, you know, got pushed probably, but looked like he immediately had re-injured his left leg, which was already heavily like braced and, you know, compression sleeved and all that. But he kind of hopped off the field on one foot, and kind of spiked his stick on the sideline as soon as he got there. So that sucked to see. I mean, you want these guys to be healthy because you want everybody to give everybody their best shot. It's how you get the best games. So, you know, it's something to watch for the tournament. It did not look like something where we will see Nick Ramsey anytime soon, but, you know, who knows? Rodriguez has not been out there. He did not play a second against Princeton. So they were down to, you know, their freshman Fogo, who McMeekin obviously was able to beat consistently. You know, Yale even tried Luke Mahalik facing off a couple of times when Anzalata was hurt. But Yale has enjoyed the best face-off percentage basically in America this year. I think their unit of Rodriguez, Hackler, Stuzan as a three-man group is the best in America, but you lose Rodriguez in the middle of it, and it becomes a whole different ball game. Suddenly, you do not have that, and you feel it. You really feel it. It was palpable against Princeton. The Tigers played like a team with their season in the balance, and so they win 15-8. They win pretty handily there. They get the rematch this weekend against Yale up in Ithaca. At number 13, I have the Elis. I have Yale there. They drop a spot behind Princeton. They are also 13 in the poll. They are at 10 in the RPI. Yale, as we said, they need to figure out the face-off spot. Brandau obviously can cook, but he needs the ball to do it. Princeton also, I mean, it wasn't just they were winning face-offs. And I'll stay just kind of on this because this is, you know, it's a Princeton-Yale game. But the Tigers had some long possessions. They were getting reset after reset. And the Yale defense was just gassed. You know, Pisano is a solid player, but this Yale defense, like, nobody's defense, really, is built to just withstand a continuous 3-4 minutes of an attacking offense in a shot clock era, too. This isn't 4 minutes of offense from an era where you could hold the ball for a while and pull it out and get reset. This is 4 minutes of Princeton attacking with Mackesy, with Kabiri, with Palumbo, where, you know, one weapon after another. They're coming at you and they're ripping shots and they're just getting rebounds or they're winning runouts or they're hitting the post and getting the ball and just several minutes of offense at a time. The Yale defense just couldn't withstand it. I think if Rodriguez gets healthy, Yale immediately becomes very dangerous. Otherwise, you're going to need that defense to be sharp. You know, Yale's gone to a kind of a two-goalie system where they have Paquette and Conrad kind of split halves now. You know, do you stay with that? Do you get to a point where you like one goalie or the other in a big game? It's, you know, that end of the field, if Rodriguez is not there to protect it, it gets very interesting. It becomes an interesting proposition for Yale for sure. Because the rest of the Ivy faces off pretty well. The entire NCAA tournament field is going to face off pretty well. It is not the thing you want to be the worst in the tournament at, for sure. At number 14, I have St. Joe's. I'm still matching the poll. I'm sorry it's so boring and I just matched the poll all the way down, other than Q's and Hopkins. It's just kind of how it goes, I guess. The Hawks are 15 in the RPI. They beat Richmond this week to win the A-10 regular season crown, win the top seed. They don't host the tournament because the A-10 was already set. It was predetermined. They're getting played at UMass. The Hawks' win streak, I think, is now 10 games. I think it's the longest in D1. Nobody wants the Hawks. Nobody wants them. The offense is good. Gavin Tye has been very good facing off for them. It's been a question for them coming into the season was, Zach Cole is gone. Who's going to paper over some holes in your defense? Gavin Tye has done very, very, very well, I think. And then Levi Virch, I mean, is a tornado with a lacrosse stick. I know the offense is stacked and fun. He is one of the more fun defensemen to watch because he's just everywhere. He's such a high motor. He's definitely a future pro. He's really fun. The Hawks play UMass, play the host in that A-10 tournament this week. Number 15, I have Towson. Yeah, it's still matching the poll here. I apologize. I'm boring. Towson is 17 in the RPI. Again, it's immaterial. It might as well be 100. The CAA is a one-bid league. Towson beat Delaware to get the CAA crown. They were hosting anyway, but now they're the one seed. They are the winners of 7 in a row. The losses, Towson's losses this year are Hopkins, Virginia, and Loyola in overtime. The Tigers can hang with people. I'm telling you, when you get to that first round, the team that comes out of the CAA, like they do every year, like it's been Delaware, it might be Towson this year, is going to put the fear of God to somebody. It's going to scare the hell out of somebody. They're going to have people in the fourth quarter being like, can they do it? Because they can. They play Drexel this weekend to start the CAA tournament. At 16, I have Penn. Quakers didn't play this week. Again, they are 16 also in the final poll. Some sort of shuffling as teams kind of move around them because they didn't play this, you know, just move up a little, move down a little, whatever. Penn has an RPI of 12. They're going to be a team to watch on Selection Sunday, certainly depending on how the Ivy League tournament goes. They have wins over Duke, Cornell, Delaware, losses to Carolina, lost to St. Joe's. If Penn beats Cornell a second time and makes the Ivy League tournament final, but they lose, are you putting them in? How do you weigh them against that Georgetown team? Again, it feels like bubble collision course for these two, maybe. I don't know. Again, it depends on how everything else goes. It's tough to say. I've never been good at the bracketology thing, but like I said, I think all four teams in the Ivy League tournament are good enough to go to the NCAA tournament and win a game. But all four ain't going. All four are not going. A bid thief in the Ivy League tournament is fun to think about, be it Penn or Princeton. 17, I got Richmond. Now we have something different. Richmond, I have 17. The final poll has them at 18. This has to be the first time all year I have Richmond higher than the poll does. I have not done that all year. That's a stunner. Spiders are 26 in the RPI. Who cares? They need to win the A-10. Dalton Young impresses me more every week. I could watch him run an offense. I think he's going to be a great pro. I hope we get the rematch of St. Joe's and the Spiders for the A-10 AQ. That game will have multiple future pros in it for sure. But that'll be a good one. We got a good one last weekend. I would just sign up to watch that game again for sure. At number 18, I told you at the bottom we'd be a little different. At number 18, I have BU. I thought the big comeback win over Colgate was impressive. BU is at 20 in the final poll after that win. They are 24 in the RPI. They absolutely need the Patriot League title. I think a little bit higher than everyone else is where I have them here at 18. Again, they're 20, but I think snapping their three-game skid in the way they did, erasing an 8-goal deficit against a good team like Colgate. Colgate is also, you know, not just a good team, but they are very good in goal. They are very good on loose balls. They have very good poles, some good individual defenders. They win possessions back from you well. So I think erasing an 8-goal deficit against a team like that is very impressive. I think it's the kind of win that gives you a massive boost in confidence, momentum, heading into your conference tournament. But again, it's the Patriot League, and I've been saying it for weeks, nobody knows what the hell is going to happen in the Patriot League. They get a rematch for their efforts in that game. This time they are at home. So we get BU Colgate again. See if Colgate can get out to a big lead and hold it this time, or if BU takes care of business. 19, I have Michigan. They came in at 17 in the poll. They beat Ohio State this week in the opening round of the Big Ten tournament. Michigan is at 16 in the RPI. They're kind of a spicy bid thief type of team. They've shown they can beat Maryland. They did it this year already. They beat Maryland, whatever, 3 straight times. You know, they'll give you a game. I think Justin Tiernan set a single season goals record for Michigan in that game. So congratulations to him. And I think he beat Mikey Bame's record I think he set it a year ago. But Michigan, I have it 19 here. Tall task for them this week, obviously. They get Hopkins. Jacksonville is my 20th ranked team. Jacksonville did not make the final poll. They have an RPI of 30. Again, it's the ASUN. Who cares what your RPI is? You need to win the conference to get it. I have been ranking Jacksonville here down at 20, and they keep ending up and also receiving votes, so I guess I'm just monkey wrenching everybody else's plan or whatever, but I ranked Jacksonville because I think they're good. They've won, I believe, 9 straight, something like that, 9 of 10. It's interesting the way the ASUN breaks the tie at the top. So Utah, Air Force, and Jacksonville all finished 8-1 in conference. The tiebreaker that they got down to figure out who the one seed should be was the goal differential between those three teams when they played each other. Utah was +1. Air Force was even. Jacksonville -1, I believe, was how it went. So in most conferences, the way it goes is, all right, Utah then wins that tiebreaker. They're the one. And then you go back to the top of the tiebreaker rules, which would be head-to-head. Jacksonville beat Air Force. Jacksonville's the two. Not in the ASUN. In the ASUN, that goal differential tiebreak for a multi-team tie persists to break the tie the whole way. So Utah is the one. Air Force is the two, even though they lost the head-to-head with Jacksonville. And Jacksonville is the three. So Jacksonville misses out on a bye, which is rough. Air Force gets the bye, and they are hosting, and Utah gets a bye. Jacksonville has to play, I believe, Bobby Moe. I believe they play Robert Morris, but they have to play the extra game because of the nature of that tiebreaker being a little bit different than how everybody else does it. Outside of the poll, the receiving votes crew. I guess I'll start with Delaware. Delaware was in the top 20. They came in at 19. I did not rank Delaware. I kind of had Delaware as team 21. They lost to Towson this week. I think given some of the other results around the country, I kind of jumped some other teams around ahead of them. Basically, BU jumped over them for me to get in and push them out. It's still CAA, AQ, or bust. The media poll, again, at this point doesn't mean a ton. Delaware needs to win the conference. They are the 2 seed in the CAA tournament. Also receiving votes, Harvard. Harvard has an RPI of 18. Their season is now over. They missed the Ivy League tournament. They weren't in the mix to even make it this last weekend. They aren't in the mix for an at-large spot. The only thing that was going on in the Harvard game this weekend was they played Brown, and they could spoil things for Brown. Bruno needed to win. Brown was actually still alive for the conference tournament, despite the fact that they took the field with a 3-10 overall record this weekend. But if they had beaten Harvard and Yale had won, Brown would have been in the Ivy League tournament. Would have been something else. Harvard, the Crimson return a number of outstanding players. Of note, obviously, is Sam King, who will enter next year as one of the top attackmen in America. He'll be like a preseason first, second team attackman kind of guy. So they'll have some high expectations. They'll have some lofty goals next year. I did not really consider ranking them, though. I did not have them as a team in the top 20 right now. One player of note, I believe I saw Matt Chandick tweeted today, but Greg Campisi, their LSM, who I think has been an All-American. He's All-American good for sure. He is doing a grad year next year at Notre Dame. The Irish just add those uber-talented Poles. You'll have a long stick group next year with Campisi, with, I believe, you know, you'll have Will Donovan. It's, oh boy, are they going to be good. That's a great get for the Irish. Colgate was in receiving votes. The loss to BU had me not really consider ranking them. They're 23 in the RPI. They get the quick rematch, like we said. They get BU this week, chance to avenge that loss and that eight-goal, surrendering an eight-goal lead. Patriot League could very much go to anyone who made that tournament. I know it sounds stupid when I say that. Everybody in the tournament can win the tournament. Well, of course they can. But there's nothing that would surprise me. There's no result in that tournament that would surprise me right now. Everything is just like, it's anarchy in the Patriot League. I don't know. I can't think of a less dumb way to say it than that. I don't know. I should be better at this. But Patriot League, that's the tournament I can't wait to watch. It's on CBS Sportsnet. And by the way, the crew that calls those Patriot League games with Evan Washburn and David Ryan, outstanding. I love those broadcasts. They're so good. I know it's fun to get on Twitter and malign Quint and Kark and all that, who do a really good job. And I know people like to pile on them. I can't for the life of me figure out why nobody prepares as hard as those two guys do for games, and they do a spectacular job. But it's just fun to hate the guys in the booth, I guess. But the CBS crew of Evan and Evan Washburn and David Ryan do really, really well. That's a great crew doing those games. I really enjoyed their broadcasts last week for the regular season finales in the Patriot League. Also receiving votes, Carolina. So Carolina beat Duke. Should be no surprise to see them get votes. I did consider ranking them on the strength of a Duke win. It's not crazy to rank someone if they knock off a top five team. I don't care what your record is or how the rest of the season's gone. If you beat a top five team, you're probably worthy of top 20 inclusion. I didn't end up ranking them. I would not blame anybody who did. UNC, with the win, had a chance at the ACC tournament. Let's talk through this, you know, for a second. I'm sure it's been talked to death everywhere else. You've already heard it by now, but there were two scenarios at play here. The first was UNC wins by five or more. They are in. It is a lock. They have made the ACC tournament if they win that game by five plus goals. I had originally thought it was 7+, but they cap goal differential at 5 goals. It's actually 5+. Anyway, UNC winning by 5 or more, they are in. They erase the goal differential tiebreaker that was at play for UVA, Duke, and UNC, and they make the tournament. This was very much a scenario that was in play. I don't think anybody thought it would be. Nobody took the field or turned on their TV that day thinking Carolina is going to beat Duke by 5 goals. Certainly not 9, which is how much UNC was up by. UNC had a 9-goal lead. That scenario, you make the tournament, was right there for them. And then, of course, Duke goes on a 6-goal run. They close, whatever. They get within whatever it was, 2 or 3. They lose 15-12. They lose by 3 goals. So now the head-scratching kind of starts. The puzzling thing to me here is, you could have done a couple of things. You could have kept attacking like crazy and doing what you were doing and trying to just pile up goals, and keep that margin wide. Okay. Again, you're up by 9. You need to just give up. You can give up 4 goals over the course of the end of that game and keep winning and keep making the tournament. To do that, maybe you say, hey, every possession is lasting at least 80 seconds. I don't care how many we corner, but let's take the air out and protect our 9-goal margin and go to the ACC tournament. UNC really didn't do either one of those things. And then Duke makes their run. They get within 3. And then at the end of the game, UNC's got the ball. Duke is doubling. There is an empty net. An empty net. A free goal. UNC doesn't attack the empty net. They don't go at an empty net in a game where goal differential can send them to the ACC tournament. The Heels were a couple goals away from a locked-up ACC tournament berth, and they just ran the clock out anyway. Did the sideline not realize that? That was what was at stake? Did players not get the message communicated to them correctly? Did they not know? What in the world is the rationale for not going at an empty net when you're just a few goals away from a locked-up ACC tournament berth? I'm sure there's some conspiracy theory version where it was better for this to happen. You got to try and play for the ACC tournament if you're UNC, right? What's going on here? UNC gets the win, and honestly, winning the game still made them alive for the ACC tournament, but they needed then a win from UVA that they ended up not getting. If attacking an empty net is the difference between your season continuing or ending, why aren't you going at an empty net? Are they a long shot to even make the tournament if they win to make the NCAA tournament? Even if they make the ACC and miraculously win two games and win the ACC tournament, there's no AQ. So, are they a long shot still to make the tournament? Probably, yeah. Probably a pretty serious long shot. But make somebody else tell you no. Put it on the table. Attack the empty net. Try and get your margin back up. Try and get yourself into the ACC tournament. Make some magic happen. Play for the scenario where somebody keeps you out. Don't keep yourself out. I don't know. That was the way I felt watching it. You think about that magical run that took UNC to a national championship, where I don't know what their RPI and what their all those metrics and everything were going into the NCAA tournament that year. I'd have to go back and look it up, but that was a team that needed a magical run through the ACC tournament, through the end of the regular season, through the ACC tournament, just to make the tournament, and then they won the title. How can you not have that on your mind if you're at UNC? Let's see if we can do it again. Let's bottle that magic again. To see an empty net and a guy running along the end line, running the game out when goal differential mattered, I was not happy to see it. Not happy to see it at all. All right, so I did not rank UNC. Not because of that, but I didn't rank UNC. Albany got votes. Albany won. They locked up the top seed and the hosting rights in the America East. I thought about Albany for the top 20. Not enough spots, really. I didn't look at any of those 20 teams I ranked and think, if they play Albany today, I'll pick Albany. Albany beat Binghamton to lock up the number one. Binghamton in the exceptionally rare scenario of you will either host the tournament or miss the tournament. You are either the one seed or out. It's not easy to make that happen, but that's what happened in the America East. Binghamton misses it. Their season is over. Albany gets Merrimack in the America East opening round, which is, I don't even know how to compute this stuff. These two teams just played, and the entire talking point out of the game was the fact that a Merrimack player used a racial slur towards a member, or said something racially offensive towards a member of the Albany team, launching, obviously, a storm of stories, the dismissal of a player, and now Coach Morgan stepping down from Merrimack effective immediately. And now the two will play each other again, and the team will be coached by the remaining staff at Merrimack because Coach Morgan's resignation is effective immediately. So they make the tournament and their head coach ain't there. It's so bizarre. And honestly, to me, it kind of sent this weird signal. It felt like, it was weird. It was like, did you think you weren't going to make the tournament? So you're pushing the coach out and then you made the tournament and now you're like, well, we pushed him out. So what do we do now? I don't know. It was weird. The optics here are, they're weird to me. Very weird to me. Anyway, Albany is obviously going to be the heavy favorite to win that one. But Albany got votes. I didn't really consider Albany as a top 20 team. They're a step below the other teams I ranked. Lehigh got votes. I get ranking Lehigh. They've won four straight. They have the OT win against BU. They got the win over Lafayette that got them, I believe they are the two seed in the Patriot League. Four straight wins by a combined six goals. So they're winning these tight games, something that you love to see from a team that's got some younger guys and has a new coach. Winning those close games is the sign of a team that's figuring themselves out and they're getting comfortable in those big-time moments. I had them kind of on the list. I could not get them into the top. I could see the rationale. You know, if you're ranking BU, if you're thinking about ranking BU, you probably have to think about ranking Lehigh because they just beat BU and just beat Colgate. So Lehigh deserves to kind of be in that conversation. So, you know, you think about them. They were a 22, 23, 24 neighborhood team for me. Loyola lost to Army, had their 5-game win streak snapped. They were in receiving votes. It was a close game. That game was very much in doubt late, for sure. Loyola is a tough out. They scrap. I did not consider ranking them really in their recent form. I guess I could see it. Again, it sounds stupid, but everybody in the Patriot League tournament can win the tournament. They're all good enough to beat everybody else. You know, some conferences, you look at it and be like, all right, that 6 seed, they ain't beating the 1. Come on. Everybody from the 1 to the 6 is good enough to beat everybody else in the Patriot League. Loyola gets Navy in the Patriot League tournament. Some of these games, by the way, you're listening to this, it's Tuesday. There are Patriot League tournament games today. There are games today. Utah was in the also receiving votes category. They finished. They are the top seed in the A-Sun. If you want to put them on a field with Jacksonville today, I think I'm picking Jacksonville. Utes are hot. They've won 7 in a row. If you want to say they're the 1 seed, so I should have ranked them and not Jacksonville, I disagree. Their last 4 opponents are Lindenwood, Mercer, Cleveland State, and Queens. Not exactly murderer's row to close the season there. But look, 8-1 in conference play, they are a good team. But they have a bye now before their first A-Sun tournament game. But Utah was in the receiving votes category. Sacred Heart in the receiving votes category. They are hot. I mean, they're hosting the MAC tournament. They had a bye last week. They'll play Siena this weekend. They've won 9 in a row. They are on fire. Coach Basti was coach of the year in the MAC. There are superlatives all over the place on that team. It's been such a good year for Sacred Heart. And it's funny, I do for New England Lacrosse Journal, you sometimes see my stuff over there, but I do previews for teams in the region. I did Sacred Heart, and it was in the preseason, I was talking to Basti. I talked to them about fall ball, stuff like that, and he was like, you know, it's weird, or it's not weird, but you know, it's different, but we didn't play anybody in fall ball this year. They didn't scrimmage anybody else. They had, you know, red-white games. They had, you know, some of their guys on the team pick up teams. They have their kind of scrimmage games just completely internally playing each other, all built on let's get everything installed and comfortable for our team together and let's be able to do it consistently when the season starts. It feels like that's paying off for them. It's interesting to see a team take the approach of we're not going to scrimmage anybody else. All in-house. We'll do red-whites. We'll have it fun and competitive that way. And we'll be focused on getting everything installed while the weather is still good here in Connecticut. So you don't go through the fall freezing your butt off trying to learn an offense. But it's an interesting approach to take. It feels like it's paying dividends for them this year. Because they are playing very consistently right now for sure. High Point beat UMass pretty handily a week ago. It makes them a 3 seed in the A-10 tournament. So they play Richmond this weekend in the semis. That's going to be a fun one. High Point's a solid team. I don't think they're quite top 20 good to me right now. I don't think they are better than the other 20, you know, teams I ranked ahead of them in America right now. But they are good. And Brandon Maia might get drafted in a week here. Keep an eye on him for sure. We have a jam-packed week of action. As I said, Tuesday is for the Hunter today, folks. The stakes are higher than usual because it's conference tournament time. There are 4 games today that are Patriot League or A-Sun games. So there's 4 teams that are going to see their season continue and 4 teams that are going to see their season end in all likelihood. Thursday jam, 12 more games on Thursday. MAC, A-10, America East, Big 10, CAA, all playing on Thursday. Friday night, ACC tournament, Ivy League semis. And it all wraps up over the weekend, Sunday night selection show, 9 o'clock, ESPNU. We'll have the usual Friday show previewing all the action for the weekend. It'll be a little abbreviated because I don't have previews for all the games during the week, but there's enough going on this weekend that you'll want those anyway. So we'll have the usual Friday preview show for all the college games and for the NLL semifinal doubleheaders over the weekend. I mean, this is just the best time of year. It's the absolute best time of year. I have been having so much fun. What a week it's going to be. I'm excited. That's going to be it for today. Thank you for coming back, though, and for sticking around with me. And we'll see you next time.
Suffering from aches and pains? The all-new Tempur-Pedic Adapt mattress eases your pressure points all night, every night. Now, save up to $500 on select adjustable mattress sets at Tempur-Pedic.com. Select adjustable mattress sets only. Lesser savings may apply.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.